Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
You're going to be a football player when you grow up.
This is Raider Nation Radio 920. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've been in football all my life.
JR is in Philly. How you doing, JR?
What's up, guys? What's up, Link? What's up, Vinny?
Doing all right, man.
Listen, I was going to call and make my Harbaugh point, but the last two callers made me switch my pitch up. Because I've been constantly hearing people talking about moving on from Carr, and the reason is he's not elite. And one of the last callers said, after Herbert, he's the third best quarterback in the division. But I want to ask Vinny this, but particularly Link, because Link, you've been in the locker room, you played in the league. Everybody is down on Carr to an extent because he's not elite. But if you look at the roughly now 20 years of dysfunction that this Raiders organization that we love have been putting out, how could anybody become elite in this? Name me one quarterback that has reached elite status that has had to deal with constant dysfunction, turnover, and chaos. And that's what I don't understand. It's almost like we have a unfair double standard when it comes to Derek Carr. They complain he's not elite, but who could become elite playing for this Raiders organization? That's the honest and sad truth about it. The fact that we all thought that once Gruden and Mayock got together, Gruden had that 10-year contract, oh, this is going to be great, finally some stability. And 3 years later, we're talking about another coach and a GM. That's been the Raiders. How can any quarterback have sustained or high-level success? Look at Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers took over for a Hall of Fame quarterback. He fell into a good situation. Patrick Mahomes has the softest landing spot I've ever seen from a quarterback picked in the top 10. He went to a division winner. He got to sit and learn while they won the division again. And then by the time he took his first snap as the full-time starter, he had three All-Pros, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and at the time, Kareem Hunt. He had an all-time quarterback guru, an offensive genius, and Andy Reid. And people wonder why he's having the success he's had.
And he had a great offensive line at that time, too. I'm not sitting here comparing. That was a great call, JR, and I agree. And all you really have to do is name me all the quarterbacks since Rich Gannon, in between Rich Gannon and Derek Carr. If you want your answer to that question, not many can be that had the chance to be that great. And just look at how long it took to get a respectable and an above average. Is he elite? To me, elite is Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. No, there's not many guys like that. But can you win with him? 1,000%. And I think you have to do right by him and build a good enough team around him. And if you do, and it doesn't have to be the Green Bay Packers of Vince Lombardi or anything like that. Just put together a team that makes sense. And Lincoln, I thought that John was actually on his way to doing that. And if you look at the stats, at least, Derek Carr had the best 4 years of his career under John Gruden.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said in the last hour, there are plenty of reasons to keep Derek Carr. There are also, you can make some solid arguments that you should look elsewhere. But in my opinion, he's not the top of your list, the top of your priority list.
Of issues.
I mean, you obviously have to decide if his agent is worth a damn, he's going to come in and demand some stability or to understand his client's future. He's going to ask for an extension. He's going to ask for a guaranteed money. He's going to ask for that. If he's worth a damn, with 1 year left and there's no guaranteed money, he would be foolish. he would be erroneous representation if he doesn't. So you have to make up your mind whether or not you're going to stay with him. But again, I say that that's not the top of their priority list. It really isn't. I think you need a fresh outlook because you have a running game. Because when Kenyon Drake comes back, even if you decide to say with Jalen Richard or just, you know, add another piece or whatever it is at the running back spot, you've got a decent running game already in place. You have to fine-tune the offensive line. There's no doubt about it. So you have to address that no matter what you do at quarterback or who you stand for. So there are other places to go, but you've got stability. You've got playmakers. You finally found a slot receiver that you can keep forever, in Hunter Renfrow. You've got that weapon in Darren Waller, who's underpaid, so you probably have to redo his contract to make him a little bit more secure. But you got to find an X receiver. There's no doubt about it. But you've got pieces. You've got guys like that show that they can play the position or show that they can go out there and do the job. You might not be in love with Zay Jones, might not be in love with his speed, but I think he's useful in this offense.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So there are pieces and places. The least that you have to concern yourself with is the quarterback. And so if you decide to stay with him, if the Raiders do decide to stay with him, I think the least they could do is bring in a new offensive coordinator to give him a fresh outlook.
Yeah, and I think that is going to happen. I think that there's going to be I think they move on. That's just my personal opinion. I think they that they go in a different direction at head coach. I could be completely wrong. Really quick though, Lincoln, you mentioned the offensive line. We're not here to take anybody's job away or anything like that. But if you were in charge with this offensive line, and let's assume that they find a replacement for Brandon Parker. I think Brandon Parker could still be the, now more than ever, can still be maybe, a credible swing tackle for you. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's a starter, not on an elite team or an elite offense. So let's assume that the Raiders get that fixed. What are you looking for from this? And everything else stays intact on that offensive line. What exactly would be your plan to make sure that this offensive line is better next year, short of the upgrade at right tackle? I'm talking about schematically and fundamentally. What would be your change that you would make in order to put this offensive line in a better position to succeed?
Well, I would definitely see the health of Denzel Good, the possibility. I would move on for Richie Incognito.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Denzel Good is one that you can probably keep who's serviceable.
Right.
I don't know if he would be a good tackle in this division. I haven't seen enough. I've seen him move, a little bit when he was playing sort of swing and doing stuff the year before last for Trent Brown and stuff like that. But I just haven't seen enough to say that I think that he could be out. So you have to find a right tackle. I think that has to be addressed in depth. I think that you need to find out what you got out of Lester Cotton, his ability, and as well as what you have. I think you move on from Nick Martin. Nick Martin, the other one. Was that the Houston backup that we signed? The Houston that never saw the field?
Yeah, Nick Martin.
Was okay. So I think you kind of move on him because you had the guy that you drafted from Pittsburgh last year. I think he's serviceable. So
No, he's no longer here.
Oh, he's gone?
No, Morrissey? he got picked up off the practice squad.
Okay, so then you keep Nick Martin because you got to have depth. But I do think Brandon Parker is a swing guy. So with that being said, there's not much. You have to address the right tackle position.
But fundamentally or scheme wise, is there something that you would like to see them do differently?
Fundamentally, I think that you need to have a committed offseason with Alex Leatherwood.
Yep.
Because if he's going to be your guard or if you want to move forward and keep him inside, he definitely needs training. I think he can be improved. He can be improved upon, but you have to work. I saw some improvement at Dorsey towards the end of the season out of his play. But he needs a long extended offseason and he needs to be coached up like there's no tomorrow.
All right. So understanding that you only have a certain amount of time that you can work with these guys during the offseason. We understand that. Is there somewhere you could send him to, recommend him going to really be able to get some high caliber, fundamental, whatever kind of teaching you think he needs? Is there a place that you can send an NFL offensive lineman to hone their game in the offseason?
The first thing I would do is sign him up in a boxing gym. That's the first thing I would do, and I pay for all it, and then I would find.
I'll pay somebody.
I pay for
well,
it.
You hear it here. Exactly. I'm gonna get it.
I'm not saying that Lincoln Kennedy will pay for it. I'm just saying if I'm the Raiders, I'll pay for it.
I don't know if that's allowed.
Well,
under the salary.
Hey, well, there's.
I would strongly urge him.
Yeah, there are people that you don't have to know about. They still can find things to do. Okay, so they don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
But I would definitely take it up, and I would find a solid offensive line coach to work with him personally. I would that's take somebody, hire somebody, at. You know, not somebody.
Doesn't Willie Anderson have something? Doesn't he have like a lineman camp or something?
I'm
like
sure
that?
There are out there. I mean, I know that, well, whoa, Jackie Slater had one forever at Azusa Pacific. I don't know if it's still going on.
We need to start the Lincoln Kennedy Academy.
I'm not coaching.
Not you don't have to coach. You can lend a hand at a camp. And, yeah, maybe make a little bit of money.
You know, I mean, yeah, let me,
you put your name on it and get out there and say a few things and give a rah-rah speech. Yeah, yeah, write the $20,000 check right here.
There are places. I'm sure there are places out there. And if not there, I mean, they can be easily created. But there are guys who are close that just need to be worked with.
Yeah.
And under the current CBA, you're right. The NFL coaches can't do it. But you know, there are ways that you can work around.
All right, we talked about fundamentals. Now, this is what I'm trying to get at. Did you feel like this offensive line schematically was utilized correctly? Or is there a different way that you would have, you know, zone blocking, whatever kind of blocking scheme that you think?
They got into a rhythm in the last six games of the season. Five games of the season.
Right.
I take out the Kansas City game. The last five games of the season, they got into a rhythm, and it was a rhythm that was productive, and that you could see growth, and you could see progression out of. That's what you want. That's what you talk about when you talk about chemistry. You that needs to happen. You have to play together. You have to take the ups and downs, the wins, the losses, the you know Willie Lump Lumps, and everything else, and you have to move forward. And I thought they did that in the final five games, especially the final four games. Because there was times where the protection was a little bit more solid. The run game was a little bit more solid. You know, the truth of the matter, and I said this on countless broadcasts when I was calling the games, the Raiders were better running downhill than running stretch plays. And it showed. It was the progression showed for Josh Jacobs running straight downhill. In that Charger game, he was running straight downhill. He wasn't running sideline to sideline, running straight downhill. And they were more productive, you know, blocking and generating momentum that way with the run game. The passing game was coming together as well as it did. There were solid times. So schematically, I thought they were fine. It's just taking time to learn how to play together.
Yeah. If they were to make an offensive line coaching change, boy, I would look to Aaron Cromer. He was on the Rams staff.
Cromer coached the Raiders, too. He was my head coach. He was my offensive line coach when the Super Bowl.
What do you think of Aaron Cromer?
I liked Cromer. Cromer was a good guy.
Great teacher.
Yeah. He brought along a lot of the philosophy that Bill Callahan had before him, the predecessor before him, and I think he kind of took that to other teams. But he was a great offensive line coach.
Yeah, and it was the Rams went in a different direction, but he was there when they went to the Super Bowl. I would, like, always go over to his group during practice just to listen, man, because, you know, I was like, wow, this dude, he had a great way about him. So, you know, just something to consider. Art is on the line. How you doing, Art?
Hey, how you doing? How y'all doing?
Good.
Wonderful.
All right. Yeah, I just want to chime in real quick. I like to have the season, how we finished it off. It was pretty good. I wish we could have won that game. You know, there's a lot of errors that went bad in that game. And I think we could have won it, yeah. But it is what it is. Hopefully the Raiders give Carr a new contract. You know, I am down for him staying with the Raiders. Not fully interested in the Russell thing, to be honest, as a fan. I've been a long-time Raider fan. Watched Lincoln Kennedy get down back in the day. It was awesome. But, yeah, I think the Raiders are not that far away of being to go back to the playoffs, but also making a good run to the big game, you know, just get another, replace Ruggs, a speedster, one or two fast guys like him on the team, and another running back, maybe add on someone that was like a familiar Darren McFadden type player, you know, without the injuries. But anyways, I think the Raiders are pretty good in the squad. Hope they make the right decision on the coaching. You know, I do like Bisaccia, but I do like the name Jim Harbaugh, you know, and a couple other ones. It's just kind of hard right now, and I feel for Bisaccia and the Raiders, and they want to keep him. And that's, you know, I don't want to mess that up, whatever they feel and how they want it. You know, I think what will be best for the team. But end of the day, Mark Davis has the final say, and he's going to do what he feels what's best.
I appreciate the call, Art. Thank you very much. And Lincoln, yeah, getting back to the wide receiver, I think it's like, yeah, you want a fast guy, no doubt. I mean, that's what Ruggs was, what he represented. But gosh, you know, you just look around the league at some of these young wide receivers that have come into the league, the Justin Jeffersons, Jamar Chase, these guys that just are expert route runner, get open kind of guys. I wouldn't, you know, and you know, they're fast enough. They may not be 4.2, 4.3, but they're definitely fast enough, and they get open, and you don't have to be that speed burner all the time. You don't always have to look for that to have quality at wide receiver. Look at Cooper Kupp. Look at Hunter Renfrow. These guys.
Well, they're different receivers, though.
They are, but no, but what I'm saying is, I think the Raiders, instead of specifically looking for Henry Ruggs' replacement, I think maybe find a wide receiver that has a chance.
And I don't want to cut me to cut you off, but when you're talking about what this team needs an X. You see what I'm saying? It needs an X receiver. That's what Henry Ruggs was. He was an X receiver.
Do you think that they already – I mean, do you think they also need – like, are you good with Edwards being
– Well, Edwards is the Z.
Right.
I think Edwards we've seen flashes out of him at times. And to be fair, I don't really think they utilized him as well as they could with the play calls that they had or established to him. They tried to get the ball to him. But I think that – the Z is serviceable with what you have already in a roster. I would try to see if Zay Jones can play the Z or just has a little bit of a changeup because I like Zay. You see what I'm saying? But they need an X receiver, and that's specifically what we're talking about. That's a Henry Ruggs.
What's Odell Beckham?
Odell Beckham is an X. So just like Deshaun Jackson is an X.
All right, so he's going to be a free agent.
You don't want Beckham.
Why?
Headache. Don't want Beckham. Don't need a headache.
I've heard just great things about him in Los Angeles.
Maybe, because he's on a chance. He's on the most successful team he was for. Wasn't this his only second playoff game?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the Raiders being right there, he'd be in a very good situation here.
Yeah, but I'm saying, there are other places that you can move on. Who would you much rather have?
What's Devontae Adams?
X.
Okay,
but he actually plays. They move him
they
around.
They move him around, yeah.
Yeah, but he's mainly an X.
Yeah, so, none of those, and that's the role that Henry Ruggs was playing, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think that those two guys like Devontae Adams, are much more well-rounded than Henry was.
Well, I know in a heartbeat they would go after Devontae if they could.
Yeah.
Especially if they keep Derek.
Right. They're old Fresno State alums.
That would be the connection.
Exactly.
Have Derek make that call.
And I know that Derek has said that he would love to have Devontae Adams, and I know Devontae Adams has said that he would love to play for Derek Carr. It's all out there. Just
that's
go.
A marriage made in heaven, if it's a possibility.
That's what I'm saying. Like you and he's not the Olympian speedster that Ruggs was.
But no, but he's like Diggs. He's a creative route runner. He knows how to get
over. That's what I'm talking
about. And he has a great burst.
Yes.
He doesn't have breakaway speed, but he has a great burst. So
right.
When he gets open, there's that window that Aaron Rodgers exploits the hell out of with guys like Devontae Adams because they know he's going to be open.
Exactly.
Especially one-on-one coverage.
Right. And I think it's so if they can somehow be able to bring somebody like that in. Can you imagine Lincoln playing off of Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow? And
it goes back to the time when they thought they had Antonio Brown because Gruden created packages specifically for Antonio Brown, who also plays X.
Right, and let's before Lincoln gets in trouble here.
He's also available.
He is nowhere near it, like Devontae Adams just won an award with the media.
You're right about that.
I'm
not saying they're close. I'm just talking about X receiver comparisons.
Yes, exactly. Like if Antonio Brown had the mentality of
or any mental besides skewed. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Right,
I wouldn't
right.
touch him if I wouldn't put him on my enemy's team. I wouldn't.
Yes, I'm with you. So you get. The polar opposite in terms of a human being and mentally and all that from Devontae Adams, but somebody just as good or even better, really. And I think that fits perfectly with what the Raiders already have. It makes it just, it takes that whole thing to another level. Can you imagine the freedom that Hunter Renfrow would have? All three of those guys. And you could stick with a Bryan Edwards in that situation. That's not a bad thing to have him there. Or, like you said, could Zay Jones be that guy at that position? I think you're in a really strong position. But first and foremost, you got to go get Devontae Adams. And that would sure help that offense be a little bit more explosive, a little bit more consistent if you have that kind of talent on hand. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now back to your hosts, Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
Right here, the game's over. It's over.
This is a bad moment for me.
Lost the football. It's on the ground.
That looks like the face of defeat right there.
Yeah.
That'll be an automatic review.
I mean, there was no doubt in my mind.
It's a horrible rule.
The stupid rule.
That was the rule.
No, that's a fumble. No.
Wow, that really just happened.
If you can't overcome it, maybe you don't really deserve to be a championship team anyway.
The Super Bowls all happened because it wasn't a fumble.
It was a fumble. I'll never believe anything different.
You're damn right I'm mad about them.
That call really changed the trajectory of like our whole world.
No one would have ever heard of Tom if it wasn't for that night.
Head a tuck rule. Never happened. A lot of people would look back and think, well, what if?
Lincoln Kennedy. I have to ask, man.
Did you recognize my voice? I said nobody would have known who Tom Brady was.
Okay.
That was me.
Maybe we would... Okay, if that doesn't happen, if that play goes your way, we still would have heard about Tom.
No, you wouldn't. Honestly, I'm not exaggerating. I seriously believe that because at the time, Belichick was still in awe of Drew Bledsoe.
Right.
And I honestly felt because the tuck game happened. Okay. And they went on and they beat Pittsburgh and won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady based on the defense. He didn't have a stellar game. Look at his stats. I'm not taking anything away from the man that he's become. I'm saying what would have happened if it wasn't for the tuck rule game. I don't think we would have heard of Tom Brady because it wasn't until after that season when he decided to go on from Drew Bledsoe, to move on from him. It was after that season he won a Super Bowl. He's like, okay, I think we've got a quarterback. We can move on from the higher price guy. And that's when they moved past it.
Yeah. By the way, we're going to get into the tuck rule and everything like that. But you know what people kind of forget is the Patriots went to Pittsburgh, I believe, right? And they beat
the Pittsburgh. Steelers in Pittsburgh.
All right. So I'll never forget this. I'm, watching that game on television. And Don Shula had the it was his year to give the winning team the AFC championship trophy and all that, right? Mm-hmm. It was in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And it might have been Three River Stadium, too. Three River Stadium. Mm-hmm. And so imagine being in Pittsburgh. Nobody wants to see that damn ceremony.
Right.
So there's nobody left in the stands. But I always give Don Shula credit because he played that thing up like, he didn't care that there was nobody. I'm going to make sure that this was a celebration. And he's like, the David Chief Championship, to the New England Patriots. He has this big smile on his face. I'm like, you're in Pittsburgh. Nobody is like, everyone is cussing at you right now or leaving.
Right.
So anyway, but I got to ask you. You could absolutely be right. I mean, maybe Bledsoe gets the job next year and Tom Brady is out of the league in 3 or 4 years. That's definitely could have happened. But what were you're over there on the sidelines and you saw this. First thought that comes into your head, Lincoln Kennedy, as you watched that play unfold.
Okay. So backtrack. Here's the 20th anniversary of the damn tuck rule?
Getting tired of these anniversaries. 20th,
yep. January 19th.
Last year was the 19th anniversary. Yeah,
so anyways. So the play happened. We saw the fumble. We ran on the field. Offense ran on the field. And right when we were about to huddle up, we saw Walt Coleman whistle that this play is under review. I then walked back to what would be the hash mark in front of the Raiders bench. I was standing next to Charles Woodson along with Greg Beaker.
Time out real quick. What were the review rules at that point?
Well, the review rules was that it had to come from New York. I mean, because it was under 2 minutes. So we all knew that. Okay. I used to pride myself on knowing the rules.
Yeah.
So I'd never even heard of this whole tuck rule before it happened. Or never knew anything about it. Again, go back, and I'm standing at the hash mark in front of the Raiders bench, and we're looking up at the big jumbotron. And Charles is pissed. Charles is like, what are they bleeping reviewing? What the heck is going on? Fumble. It's a fumble. And I'm looking at it like, dude, looks like a fumble to me. What could they possibly review? And I remember these words from Greg Beaker because it just resonates in my mind. He says, we're the Raiders. They're going to find a way to take it from us. And I looked at Greg. I was like, how are they going to take it from us? It's a fumble. Right. You know what? The ball's come clearly knocked out. It's on the ground. And then when Walt Coleman came back and he talked about the rule, how the quarterback's arm was going forward and he was pulling it down, it was an incomplete pass. I was like, that is a ton of BS. Everybody on the sideline was cussing. But it took all the air out of our sails on the Raiders sideline. Totally deflated right. us. We never got the ball back. Obviously, the history as it is, kicked the field goal, went in overtime. They got the kickoff. They went down and kicked the field goal, game over. And so I remember going in the locker room, and that was the last time Gruden actually coached me. It was after that game. I'm going into the locker room, and I said, Gruden said, they'll never let you win as Raiders. They will always take it from you. And that was actually my motivation for the following year, because as a captain, I went out with the demeanor, and I preached this to every player that was on the Raider team the following year. We are not going to let the refs take anything. We're going to beat the living snot out of everybody we play.
Right. Right.
They were one of them. And I'm going to Super Bowl that year. So that game forever changed. And I talked about it in the 30 for 30 that comes on ESPN. I talked about how the organizations went in different directions after that night. You go back to Gillette Stadium now and you walk through their what is it, booster halls, whatever the hell they call them.
The Hall of Fame and all that.
All you see is remnants of that night, of that fateful night. The snow coming down, you see pictures of Brady, you see pictures of all their other stars, Mr. Clutch, Vinatieri, all of that's just on their walls.
Right.
Because that was the night. That was the last game that was played at that old stadium. And then the following year, they opened up Gillette with a Super Bowl victory.
Oh, that was at Foxborough. That's right.
Yeah. It was last Foxborough. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I just remember watching it on TV. It's like, what? Wait, Tuck rule? Like, it was almost like they were making up.
You weren't the only one.
Yeah. They were kind of making up rules, as they go along. And it's just to have a game like that taken away from you. By the way,
That's exactly the way I felt.
Sorry about that, but because mm-hmm. we've been having this ongoing debate about he doesn't believe that there's momentum in sports. All right, so having the sails taken out of you, that's the reverse of momentum, Damon, where it literally can affect you, even in an adverse way. So like he just said, like you're just deflated, but you can – momentum could work the other way where you're just all of a sudden, just raring to go. But you had a question, Devon?
Yeah, Lincoln, somebody posed this on Twitter, so I'm going to ask him, get a shout out to Big Deuce. He wants to know, is there a game that you wish you had back? But I'm going to spin it in a different direction because obviously you could have it back. But which game would you rather have back more, or if you could change the outcome? The Tuck rule game or the conference championship the year before against the Ravens?
What about the Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl. I feel like Lincoln and everybody on that team knew they know our playbook. We're screwed here.
Well,
we didn't know it going into it. We had a contingency plan. I mean, if there was a game that I could do over again, I would love to do the Super Bowl.
Right, right.
And have more time to plan for it. The funny thing, and people have asked me about that 2000 Raven game. The funny thing about that is that I look back on that and I don't, I didn't realize, I knew at the time we didn't know how good we were. Because the 2 years before we had went 8-8.
Right.
And then the following that year, 2000, all of a sudden we find ourselves I can't remember what the record was, 12-4, whatever it was.
Yeah, you were good.
But we ended up hosting the AFC Championship game. And it was much like, Vinny, you were talking about at the beginning of the playoff scenarios, that there's a way the Raiders can end up hosting the game and find themselves. And I said, boy, that would be a big turn of events if it happened that way.
Right.
But in the Baltimore game, we took into the Baltimore game, we had the number one rushing offense. I remember that. We were number one rushing offense in the league. The Ravens were the number one rushing defense in the league. We had Tim Brown, but we didn't really have a lot of passing weapons. So Rich Gannon wasn't really throwing the ball like that. Didn't have a prolific passing year. So we were a run first team. And I was upset the fact that when I look back on that game, we didn't have a contingency plan. If they stuffed the run, what were we going to do?
Right.
Because we just kept trying to hit our head on the wall. And the difference was that long pass to Shannon Sharp for a touchdown. That was the difference in the game.
Was that the Saragossa game?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember I was with a pack of Raider fans, man, at a party. Mm-hmm. My friend threw a house party. And whoa, man!
Yeah.
When that play happened, there was just those guys were ready to get in their cars and drive up to Oakland and find Saragossa and take care of business. Yeah. So that was just a dirty play.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, again, that's what we were dealing with at the time. So, you know, that year happened, and we were like, oh, we got a good football team. The next year happened, that was the Tuck Rule year, and I explained it in the book, so I know Paul's going to be mad at me if I give all this.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's all in the
book. As our good friend Paul Gutierrez would say, it's in the book.
It's in the book. He's reading the book, yeah.
He needs to write another chapter.
Go ahead and get if these walls could talk. There you go.
There you go.
It's in the book.
It's so funny that you should say that, because, like, we'll be in the media room working, you know, and, like, I'll say to Paul something like, Paul, man, because I know that he's the area expert on the Raiders.
Yeah.
You know, what happened in that? What was that one thing? He's like, Vinny. It's in the book. You know, he always gives me the answer, but it's anytime anyone ever asks a question about the Raiders, it's in the book. You know, all right, yes, it's in the book.
But you know, I the conspiracy theorist in me was going crazy years after that, because it was the year of 9/11, and I just felt the NFL wanted to recognize the Patriots as the world champions.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
You know, sort of along the year that the Saints won the NFL championship was on the hills after Hurricane Katrina decimated the town, and people were trying to think the Saints were going on their way out. All of a sudden, the Saints win the Super Bowl. That sort of re-energizes that organization. So, I mean, things happen.
Yeah, I've never heard these conspiracies before.
Never? Really?
No.
The Patriots one, I remember, you weren't. How old were you?
I was four, so I wasn't deep diving on the conspiracy theory
train. Yeah, but I mean, like, we were hurting as a country at that time. Oh, yeah. That was a sucker punch that happened on that day, and everybody felt it because it was just, I still remember where I was and all that. So, the Patriots with their colors, and they were the Patriots, for crying out loud. And they came out of nowhere
That was their first Super Bowl win.
Yeah. They,
you know what I mean? They had been crushed by the Bears many years before when they played.
The Patriots were just a team, man. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just, every once in a while they'll get to the playoffs, you know, and but they're not, you know, they made that one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It was Tony Eason or Grogan. I forget.
I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
I just remember the Bears didn't mop them up.
Right. So, I do remember that. And the Patriots were a big story. And obviously, like you said, the Saints were a big story. So, by the way, I just saw a story. The Colts coach, when they played the New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl, Tony Dungy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And this is where coaching sometimes matters. Not that it doesn't, but in this case it does. And he was talking about the year that the Colts played the Bears in the Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he's talking about how Devin Hester is the Chicago Bears, great, probably a Hall of Fame kick return guy. And they're going into the game, and the whole plan was not to kick to him. Don't kick it to Devin Hester, right? And so Tony Dungy admits this, says, you know, like about a day or so, 2 days before the game, I'm like, wait a minute. Are we just scared of Devin Hester?
You're missing out the important part there, is that the team chaplain gave a speech about, like, not being afraid of anybody.
There you go.
Like, they're not Goliath.
Right.
And then he was so moved by the team chaplain giving that speech.
So Tony Dungy, the head coach, starts thinking, is our approach to Devin Hester showing fear for somebody? Like, are we afraid of this guy? And he said, like, we can't be afraid of one player type of thing. You know, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he's saying.
Right. He's not Goliath.
You know, like, we're going to, and damn it, we're going to kick to him now. Touchdown on the opening. And he's like, what a mistake that was. But it's you can't coach like that. Like, you have to do the common sense thing, not the tough guy thing all the time. You know what I'm saying? So
look, to me, and to your point, Vinny, coaching is being smart.
Right.
Okay. It's just, don't overthink it. Just look at the facts. Understand that there are guys who get paid on the other side of the field. Right. Your guys are not always going to be able to dominate your guys. I mean, and if a guy needs help, you get him help.
Right.
You know, you don't have a Lawrence Taylor over there. I'm like, okay, tackle, just line up and we're going to block it. We're just going to take it. Yeah. I remember the biggest coaching errors is when, and may he rest in peace. Oh goodness. Now I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Who we got?
It was the head coach of 1997. Offensive line coach. I'm drawing a blank
of
the Raiders. Cause we played anyways. Joe Bugle, may rest in peace. He was a great offensive line coach, a great friend. I just lost my train of thought for a moment.
Yep.
We went into Kansas City. Pat Harlow was a left tackle. I was a right tackle. We were playing against Derek Thomas. Now, I can't remember who our coordinator was that year. But I remember the whole week going up to Kansas City, it's like, we're not going to do seven-step drops because we had Jeff George at quarterback. We're not going to do seven-step drops. I'm like, fine. Good, because we've got Derek Thomas out there. Us tackles have to block right. him. I don't need seven-step drops. Let's do three- and five-step drops. Let's try to run the ball. I don't want to sit there and try to back up all the time against Derek Thomas. Long story short, I think Derek Thomas might have had a record-breaking day with five or six sacks that game. I know his all-time record was, I think, was eight and right. he played in Seattle, the Seattle game. But the point was is that we were doing seven-step drops, and I'm going over the sideline, what the hell are you doing? He was over Pat Harlow, and they didn't have anybody to help him because we didn't have any parts of our line to either slide or help chip because we didn't have that part of designed in our offense.
What was motivation? Just was he? Just...
Well, listen, it was just a level of arrogance. Oh, yes. We can take advantage of him in the secondary, so let's do these seven-step drops, and we can throw the ball downfield. No, we ended up getting our asses kicked because you were so stupid to call seven-step drops. You're getting your left tackle killed.
That is the perfect use of the word arrogant, by the mm-hmm. way, because mm-hmm. that epitomizes arrogant. And by the way, Jeff George could sling it, man. I don't know.
He could.
Oh.
He could.
That dude could throw. I mean, there were some other parts. I don't know what you felt about Jeff George.
I had him at Atlanta and Oakland. It was funny in Oakland because Gruden did not like him.
Oh, well, he wouldn't be the first coach that didn't like Jeff George. There was some quirkiness to that dude, without a doubt. But when it comes to pure arm talent, oh, my goodness gracious, that guy could throw. By the way, Lincoln Kennedy, you like dogs, right?
I love dogs.
You're a dog person. Well, I don't know about you, but if maybe you have some friends or any listeners that are out there that are into French bulldogs. And by the way, they're one of the more popular dogs on the face of the earth right now. If you are a fan or maybe inquiring about a Frenchie, as they call them, they're wildly popular dogs, known for being sleek, excellent city dogs. They have a playful and an intelligent demeanor. They love people. They love other pets. And if you are looking for a French bulldog, look no further because Raider Puppies are here in Las Vegas. And they are AKC registered. They've received all their health certificates, all that type of stuff. They're surrounded, these puppies, by love from day one, love and care. So you know you're getting a great little dog if you wanted to go shopping for a French bulldog with Raider Puppies. But if you are, we got you hooked up. Call or text 702-374-5040 to inquire about a French bulldog. Tell them Vinny sent you. You will love them. I have one, Francisco. I was gone for a few days going to Cincinnati, came back home. The dude looked like he grew, you know, like he looked like a different dog. It's so cool to watch the progress and everything like that, and a great little dog. So, again, 702-374-5040 to look for if you want a French bulldog. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignore and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Charles is in Kentucky. How you doing, Charles?
Hey, I'm doing good, Vinny. Hey, I disagree with you all a little bit today. I actually think this season was a disappointment to me. I think this team was a lot better than what everybody thought. And I also think that if we traded Derek Carr, and I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, I have no idea, I can't predict the future, but I don't think it has to be a complete rebuild. I don't know why we're so down on Marcus Mariota. You know, he does have a playoff win. And I don't know if I've never heard anybody mention that, but this guy actually won a playoff game. And I think with the right offensive coordinator and if we draft a really good running back, we could still be contenders. And Carr, the last four games, I mean, the Colts game, we should have put them away early, the Chargers game. I think Carr was part of the problem that they stayed in the game. And I'm not knocking on him. You know, I'm a Raider fan. He's my favorite quarterback, long as he's a Raider. But I just seen a lot of stuff. I almost think because Gruden wasn't there, he was allowed to play too much. And a lot of stuff there that I just didn't make sense to me. I thought we should have done better. And when I hear that the Bengals are more talented us, Chase and Burrow, and that's it. Everybody else, you know, they don't have a Max Crosby. They don't have a Josh Jacobs as good as Mixon. Their offensive line really isn't better than ours. They don't have Darren Waller. So they keep saying how much more talented the Bengals team is. Yeah, Chase and Burrow, yes. But other than that, where do you go? How are they that much more talented than us. So.
Well, that's why it came down to one play. Yeah, I thought I felt like they were, you know, right there with the Bengals, and that proved to be the case. I'll say this, when you say that Derek Carr maybe had too much leeway, after John resigned and, making some calls, changes along the line of scrimmage, people need to remember, Lincoln, that Denver game and that Philadelphia game, not long after, they kind of settled down after the Gruden situation. Remember, they lost to the Chicago Bears. I thought that was heavy on their mind. It had just hit at that moment. And remember, they played kind of a weird, bad game in that Chicago Bears game. But the next 2 weeks, they were really good offensively, and they won in relative blowouts against the Philadelphia Eagles and the Denver Broncos. That was when Henry Ruggs was there, when Darren Waller was completely healthy, when they had both of their running backs were there, their defense was playing well. That offense was functioning at a high level at that point. They go to the bye week, and when they got back from the bye week, Lincoln, no more Henry Ruggs. It took a while to get that thing figured out. And then in the meantime, at some point, Darren Waller goes down too. So it's the fall off on offense, I think, was personnel related, not how Derek Carr was, quote unquote, playing. I just think that the offense got dinged up big time with some personnel losses.
If you remember when we talked about it, I said that I made statements throughout the year that a weapon's not a weapon if you don't use it. And the thing is that I think that there had to be a level of trust that Derek had to find with his offensive line, a level of chemistry with the receiving core after Henry Ruggs was gone. And it took some time. He relied heavily on Darren Waller to start the season. He developed a rapport, even more rapport, with Hunter Renfrow, noticeably so. And there were blatant times where Derek was eyeballing Hunter Renfrow to get open and had nowhere else to go with the football than that. My biggest criticism of Derek this year, especially when it comes to changing the plays, now he's always had the wherewithal with the check with me system to do that. My biggest criticism is when there's 7 seconds left or 8 seconds left or less than 10 seconds left on a play clock, you go up and you try to change the play. You can't do that. That's a bonehead move. You don't audible then because it takes too much communication. Your offensive line has to get communication. Your receivers have to get communication. You don't have time for you to go up and have to, and especially at opposing stadiums, visiting stadiums, for you to tell everybody to play. You don't have enough time to do that. So that causes more trouble than it's worth. Again, I don't think Derek
Philadelphia
is a problem.
Eagles game with a complete offense. All the weapons.
The Eagles
31
game,
of 34 for 323 yards.
The Eagles game is one of those games where I said his accuracy set him apart. That's what I would give Derek credit for. He is one of the more accurate quarterbacks in the National Football League. And when you talk about guys like Carson Wentz or Dak Prescott, their inaccuracy cost them the games that we played. Because there was at least three throws that Carson Wentz missed in the Indianapolis game that would change the outcome of the game totally. But he's not as accurate of a quarterback. And that could have been the fact you talk about arrogance. He didn't practice all week, and yet you still rely on. I would rely to hell on Jonathan Taylor. Even though he ran over 100 yards and they won the turnover battle, they still ended up losing the game because you had an inaccurate quarterback who was out of sync with his offense.
The game against the Denver Broncos, 18 of 27, 341 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Henry Ruggs, 3 catches, 97 yards. Brian Edwards, 2 catches, 67 yards. He was throwing it all over the place. A bunch of guys were getting open and getting touches. Henry Ruggs also had a pretty big game, I think, against the Eagles the week before or the week after. I forget exactly how it all played out. But what I'm saying is, sometimes we talk about this fall off that Derek Carr had, and I get what you're saying. Your weapons are only as good as how you use them. But frankly, Zay Jones isn't as good as Henry Ruggs.
I'm not saying you are. Zay Jones did show his value in the last couple of games, right?
He did, no doubt about it. But I still think that, man, Henry Ruggs was on his way to becoming a dynamic playmaker for the Raiders, and losing that, and then also losing Darren Waller, especially when the offensive line really wasn't a strength and the run game wasn't a strength as well, it was bound to happen. And everyone would say, well, Derek slid off. Yeah, it helps. It hurts when you don't have a full complement of players out there, the players that you thought you were going to have. And it's not as easy as, all right, well, Foster Moreau, you go in there and be Darren Waller. All right, Zay Jones, you go in there and now be, Henry Ruggs. There was going to be a fall off, and there was. And the great thing about this Raider team, they had a defense that was able to say, okay, you could rely on us. They're going to have to do it a little bit differently offensively because there's not as much explosiveness anymore. The defense was up to the challenge, Lincoln.
Yeah, and again, that's why it's a total team effort.
Exactly.
That we hadn't seen in quite a long time.
Yeah, and that was what was, to me, really inspiring about this team. But we will talk more about this a little bit later this week. Lincoln Kennedy, thank you so much for everything that you do. You know, I love you, and Appreciate it, brother. The 20-year reunion.
It happens. I hear about it every year this time.
Yeah, exactly. So
you want to kick my dog and just, you know, go. So.
Well, go smoke a nice cigar.
I'm going to do that right now.
There you go. All right, brother. Thank you very much.
See you, brother.
Thank you to all the callers. You guys were great. Devon Cotton, thanks for everything you do. We'll be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the Huddle. Vinny Bonsignore, Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Hey, guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT. Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.